I'm Emily Tackett, and this is Just So, an OU podcast about thought leaders here in the heartland. There's a world of voices on this campus, but there's only one Oklahoma. Today on the show, we're taking you back to your high school years, complete with hallway bullies, vicious rumors, and a crippling social hierarchy based on popularity. Get ready to get those freshman sweats, because we brought Dr. Laura Mayu, an OU professor whose research focuses on understanding popularity, on the show today to talk to us about the psychology of cool kids. Maybe you're still in high school, or maybe your decades are moved, and it's difficult to remember what it was like to be cool or not cool or somewhere in between.
I was student council president my senior year. I was probably one of the worst in the history of the school. I did not have the qualifications to be that. I think it was more of a popularity contest, and I was running against a slightly less popular person. The girl I was running against, and I'm not trying to call her uncool, but she wasn't that cool.
So just in case you forgot, I collected some audio clips about my coworkers' high school statuses by ambushing them at our holiday party.
Were you cool in high school?
No.
Why?
I was kind of like, I feel like my perception of myself then was, I was friends with a lot of different people. Is this for real? Is this something?
Tom, can I ask you a couple of questions on record for the podcast?
No.
Please.
No.
It's about popularity.
No.
It's about being cool.
No.
Jesse, were you cool in high school?
I don't think so. I think I was an outsider. I don't know.
Popular.
Sure.
But then there was also the underground popularity that goes on in a boarding school.
What is the underground popularity?
That's kind of like the not allowed activities that people do.
Can you remember who the coolest person was? Or did you like the cool kids?
No. I did not really like the cool kids. I wore skinny jeans before they were cool and rolled them up into manprees and was kind of a pop punk guy in high school. And I remember specifically one cool guy, DJ Moffitt. He was like the middle linebacker on our varsity football team. And he had the cool girlfriend. It was like the power couple of the school, Alicia Burton. And he, I think it was like indirectly, maybe in the hallway, called me gay because of my pants. And I think I was a senior at the time, so I was kind of above it, but definitely didn't like the cool kids.
There were a lot of like inside jokes. That was kind of a big thing, was like there were all these phrases and stuff that you would hear this one clique at our high school saying, and like you wouldn't know what they meant, but you didn't want them to say it like around you or about you or like anything you did, because you didn't understand what they were saying, you know? And so it never happened to me, but I saw it happen to others.
Never happened to me.
It may have happened to me. I don't remember. I don't really remember high school that well.
Sorry, I just bullied you a little bit.
Yeah, you're so cool. You're such a cool employee.
If I learned anything from hearing my coworkers' anecdotes, it's that the social hierarchy in high school was a universal experience. One with nuances depending on different schools, of course, but still one with similar enough features to make it instantly recognizable. We remember the cool kids' names. We remember their behaviors and what they said to us in the hall. We remember how we stacked up in comparison, if we did at all. But what gave popular kids this power? How did they ascend to this untouchable status? Is it ultimately good to be popular, to be safe at the top of the high school food chain? Or do the consequences of being cool outweigh the benefits? Let's get to the interview with Dr. Mayu. Can you tell us a little bit about your research and how you became interested in that area?
Sure. Well, I study peer relationships in childhood and adolescence, things like friendships, peer status, how kids get to have the peer status that they have. And so most of my focus over the last several years has been looking at a couple of things. One small sort of side project has been looking at friendships in younger children, trying to understand how kids become friends, how they learn friendship skills, you know, what makes them a good friend when they're little. And my idea is to sort of figure out, you know, how these things play out over the longer term. But my bigger research focus that I've spent the most time on has been understanding popularity in children and adolescents. And so I'm really interested in understanding how popularity is distinct from other forms of status, like being likable, and how kids become popular, what they are like once they achieve some popularity, and trying to understand why there are links between popularity and things like aggressive behavior. You know, what is it that makes aggression seem like a good strategy for somebody who is popular or who wants to be popular?
Can you help me be more popular?
I could try. I don't know that you would necessarily like the results, because what we know about being popular, the older we get, we care more about being liked, right? In order to be popular, you may have to take kind of a hit in terms of how well-liked you are. So you'd have to decide if you wanted to focus on the one or the other, and that would, you know, make it a little bit easier. If you wanted to be both, though, that's a little harder.
So people who are popular aren't well-liked?
Women especially, it turns out. Adolescent young women, anyway. So we find that popularity and likability are still pretty closely tied for males, you know, for adolescent boys. But for adolescent girls, not so much. There's a pretty significant negative correlation between popularity and likability in high school. Dang. Now, in early adulthood, it's a little different. We don't know exactly what's going on with young adults in terms of popularity. But at least in high school, the two don't easily go together for girls.
That stinks.
And that, yeah.
That's not fair.
I agree. Yeah.
What behaviors and characteristics are perceived as socially dominant?
Well, social dominance in teens is related to having influence power, and it's related to being highly visible. Kids who are socially dominant are really sociable, usually. They have a lot of friends, and everybody knows who they are. Even if you're not friends with them, you know who they are by reputation. So that's kind of what we think of as social dominance in adolescents. And there are a couple of different profiles of teens who are socially dominant. Some socially dominant teens are actually really nice. They're easy to get along with. They're good leaders. They're good to have around because they're easygoing. They can be funny. You know, they're kind kids, and they tend to be seen as trustworthy. But the other group, the other profile of the popular teen is a little different. And some popular teens are a lot more coercive with their peers. They're less easygoing, and they're more aggressive. Things like just outright physical aggression aren't uncommon, as well as things like relational aggression, which is the more sort of manipulative social forms of aggression, like trying to hurt someone's friendships or exclude them, kind of manipulate their peer relationships a little bit. So we see that both types of aggression are correlated with popularity in adolescence as well.
So it's kind of a good side and a dark side to social dominance.
Yeah. So, and the thing about it is that they don't necessarily overlap. Some kids are like popular and nice, and some kids are popular and kind of mean, and some are both. You know, some actually seem to balance the two, being kind and being unkind when it's necessary. And interestingly enough, I think there's a little bit of research that suggests that those are the most popular kids, the ones who actually know how to balance the two, be kind when it's called for, when it gets you what you want, or be unkind when you feel like it's going to be the better strategy for you. So the kids who know how to use whichever is going to best suit the circumstance seem to be more popular than anybody.
Which makes sense, but it's also kind of terrifying.
It's a little terrifying. It really is. But yeah, it's these are kids who are really adaptive. They're quick on their feet. They know how to handle the peer group.
What are the traits that weave those three groups together? What makes them or helps them ascend to that social status, to having that social dominance?
Well, that's a good question that we don't have as good an answer for. Looking at sort of long-term predictors of popularity, you know, some things that researchers have focused on are things that a colleague of mine, Tone Sillison, at the University of Radboud in the Netherlands, he talks about attention-getting versus attention-holding characteristics. And so he kind of argues that early in childhood, you know, some kids have attention-getting characteristics. They're really verbal, or they're really outgoing, like they have sort of extroverted personalities, and they're assertive with their peers, and that they just are able to kind of already manipulate and kind of move people around the way they want them to, even when they're really little, and that they get a lot of attention for that. They get their way a lot. You know, if you're the kid who's willing to go up to another kid and say, "It is my turn on the swing," off you go. You know, people are going to start responding to that unless you're just a real jerk about it. And so, you know, some researchers argue that it's really early on that some kids have characteristics that just get them attention, and then that's reinforcing because they get all this attention. And so those characteristics kind of carry them forward, you know, through childhood, adolescence, and kind of help them develop that visibility that we talked about, like everyone knows who they are, et cetera. And then it's up to them which way they use it, for good or for evil. I mean, I don't know that we have a great handle on why some kids become popular and then they're really nice to everybody, and why some kids become popular and are just kind of mean. What is it that leads kids on one path or the other?
Is it basically the same in your research, the definition of social dominance and popularity?
Pretty much. When we talk about social dominance, the way we measure social dominance in children and teens is by looking at popularity.
Yeah. Is it the same as being cool?
It's very, very similar to being cool, yeah. I mean, I think you can use cool and popular pretty much interchangeably. Socially dominant carries with it a little bit more of an implication of kind of controlling resources, like being able to make people do what you want, getting access to toys, getting access to romantic partners later on. And so popularity and coolness, I think, have less to do necessarily with like how you're controlling resources.
Okay.
But it's more like a status-based thing. But they're all really, really similar. In fact, we all tend to use these terms kind of back and forth, largely interchangeably, yeah.
What characteristics have psychologists identified, if they've identified them, that make kids cool?
So coolness is hard to study in younger kids because they don't yet really distinguish between being likable and being cool or popular. It's all kind of the same mm-hmm. when you're a younger kid. And so the kids who get nominated as cool or popular in like elementary school are the kids who are pretty nice and funny, get attention, but usually via like pretty nice or okay means, like they're not the kids that we worry about. They're funny, they're class clowns, they're easy to get along with, they play well with others. It's not until kids kind of transition into middle school that we start to see that change over into some kids being more aggressive. And so at least by middle school, we start to see coolness associated with kind of like some antisocial behavior, like aggressive behavior, like being resistant to authority, you know, like back talking to the teacher, saying things like negatively that are about their parents, you know, kind of this resistance to authority. We start to see that emerge, you know, around that transition to like sixth, seventh grade, that they're seen almost like as, you know, like the bad boy, you know, the kids who are willing to resist and not always do things that the adults around us want us to do. They're willing to be unkind. They're willing to swear. They're willing to, you know, talk back to the teacher, that kind of thing.
Because they want the social status above anything else.
Yeah. I mean, that's one interpretation, that they like how it feels to get that kind of attention, and so they're going to continue to act that way. So one big theory of sort of coolness and popularity has to do with something called the maturity gap. And this is a theory that kind of talks about why some kids develop delinquent behavior and antisocial behavior. And the idea is that, you know, if you're engaging in, certain behaviors that make you look older than your peer group, that's really attractive to other kids, even if they don't want to do what you're doing. Even if they see you smoking and you think, I don't want to smoke, but wow, that kid's kind of cool. He's smoking. You know, that's a very adult behavior that the adolescents, you know, see as having some kind of maturity associated with it. And so some people argue that, you know, the reason why popularity is associated with things like, you know, certain kinds of resistance to authority and aggressive behavior and, you know, mild delinquency and that kind of thing, substance use, for example, is because it makes these kids look a little bit more kind of grown up or mature. And the rest of the peer group is like, okay, yeah, those are the kids to watch. You know, they're a little bit more grown up than the rest of us. So it's, yeah.
I usually think of being cool as being a success. And are kids that are cool successful overall? Is there any research on that?
There is a little bit of research on kind of what happens long term to kids, but it's not even really long term. There's a couple of studies that look at high school popularity, so identify kids who are popular in high school, and then follow them for a few years after high school to see how they're doing. And one thing we know about those kids is that the kids who were popular in high school are still engaging in substance use at higher rates than their peers, you know, even 3 years later. So they're still engaging in certain health risk behaviors that were consistent with what they were doing in high school, but they're still doing it, you know, even 2-3 years later. And there's some hints that, you know, kids who were popular in high school are still kind of relationally aggressive into early adulthood as well, you know, using manipulation and threats to friendships and threats to romantic relationships as a way of, you know, manipulating and controlling people. But other than that, we don't have a great handle on kind of long-term outcomes associated with being popular. We assume, I think, that they've learned a lot by being popular in high school. They've learned some social skills. They've learned how to get attention. They've learned how to get their way. And that those behaviors probably serve them well to a certain extent, especially if they have like personality characteristics that make them easy to get along with and sociable and that kind of thing. But really, you know, do we have a great handle on like what happens to all of these kids? We don't. And I think that's probably something that people are working on right now. That's the kind of research we're focusing on now, is trying to understand, is it like a risk factor? Like, should we not want our kids to be popular in high school because of like longer term outcomes that might be negative? Or should we want them to? You know, is it not a risk factor? Is it something that where they learn a lot that can help them through adulthood?
Is there any research that maybe guides people in combating that behavior and convincing kids that popularity isn't that important?
Well, here's the thing. So I think that really involves, I think that would involve studying how parents talk to their kids about status. And I don't know of any research that does that. And in fact, that's something I've been talking to a couple of my graduate students about, like, we should do this. You know, we should recruit, you know, mothers and fathers into the lab and ask them, you know, what do you talk to your kids about? And I know that, you know, just talking to other researchers, you know, we're all sort of interested in this. It's just a lot trickier research to do because it involves, you know, recruiting parents. And it's that's more of a community kind of recruitment that tends to be trickier. But I think that that's a next important step in the research, is trying to understand, you know, how do parents kind of socialize their kids about what's important? Do they focus on status? Do they talk to their kids about popularity? When the kid comes home and says, hey, this popular kid is so mean, it's so cool, you know, how do we respond? Like, oh my gosh, that's actually not cool. You know, some kids are going to interpret it differently. Some kids are going to come home and talk negatively about the popular kid who's mean, and some kids are really going to idolize it.
Yeah.
And so how do we handle those conversations? I think that will tell us a lot about what we can do to kind of direct kids maybe in a better direction, is just get a handle on how do parents talk to kids now? Like, what's the baseline?
Yeah.
We just don't know a whole lot about that. And then we can kind of tailor our research to understand what's working and maybe what's not.
And if the parents were cool, they're probably like, of course you're going to be cool.
Totally, yeah.
You should totally be cool. It's the best.
That's another cool study that someone should do, is like identify parents who were cool in high school. And then how do they talk to their kids about popularity? Like, what is their perception, and how do their kids, you know, what are the messages their kids receive about it? You know, some of us have really negative experiences with the popular crowd. And I can't really speak to personal experience. I wasn't popular in high school, but I also went to an enormous high school where you didn't have to be popular to feel like you fit in. We all had friends. But I always knew who they were, and I was always sort of confused sometimes. Like, you know, I would watch sort of the dynamics of the popular crowd and just kind of be a little bit baffled by it, like the whole status dance and aggressive behavior and kind of the ins and outs of their dating world. And at the same time, like, I knew there were kids who felt really rejected and felt really excluded by, you know, certain popular people. And my question was always, well, why are they so popular then if they're just not, you know, easy to get along with? They're so mean sometimes. But yeah, I mean, I think how our experiences with kids from different crowds played out are going to influence how we talk to our own kids. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, that's also, I think, worth looking into from a research perspective, is to understand how those experiences that parents have translate into the messages that we give our kids about what's important at school.
Yeah. I went to a really large high school too. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking that the stereotype of the high school was so bad in movies, and how it portrayed the cool kids are all the jocks and the mean girls, and then everyone else is over here. And I was like, everyone kind of had their place, and it didn't really even feel like they were identifiably popular crowds that we would all say that person's the most popular or that person's most popular. So is that, can that be the scenario? Can there be a school where this social structure doesn't play out like it usually does?
Yes. And my hunch is that it has to do with school size. So I don't know that we have a good handle on that either. And that's also a study that we could do. But I think a lot of it has to do with what your options are. So if you go to a school where there are literally hundreds of students in your grade, there may be a few different popular crowds, little cliques of kids who hang out together and become popular. But you don't have to be a part of that in order to kind of find your place. So in a bigger school, you have options like band and orchestra and other clubs and sports teams and student governance and all kinds of ways to find your place, find your niche. And, you know, when I talk to kids who went to big high schools, they all tell me the same thing. You know, we had a hierarchy, like a popular crowd within the theater kids and a popular crowd within the band. And so it's not as cut and dried as, you know, some like really strict hierarchy that every school has and that, you know, every kid kind of fits in a certain place on it. It really seems to depend on like how your school was structured, how big it was, and what your options were.
I know that you said there may not be a ton of research on this yet, but are the characteristics that make someone popular in adolescence different than the generation before us?
Oh, looking backward, no. I don't think there's been much change, really. So, I mean, people have been studying social power, maybe not the same way. I think that the kind of quantitative study, you know, collecting data from kids, you know, that's maybe more of a modern approach to studying status. But there have been people embedding themselves in middle school and high school crowds for years and writing these really detailed ethnographies, these really detailed observational accounts of how kids get along with each other in schools and have been finding very similar things. And this is work that's been going on for decades. And so kind of the dynamics of like inclusion and exclusion and power and aggression and likability and popularity, all of these things seem to play out really similarly now as they did, you know, decades ago. We're talking, you know, like in the 70s and 80s. So this isn't new research. I mean, necessarily, you know, the methods may be new, but it's not a new focus. And we're not seeing things change a whole lot from decade to decade.
That's so interesting, because I feel like when I see characterizations of what popularity meant in like the movie Grease, and then compared it to like my high school, I was like, I think that my high school, like nerdier kids were popular.
I love hearing that.
Is that?
That's not typical, I don't think. But like I said, it's all going to depend on the school.
On the size of the school.
Yeah. Well, and probably other things, too, that we don't have a great handle on yet. But, I mean, think about it. Like, I mean, some schools are actually dedicated to arts and sciences or to math and sciences or to performing arts or, you know, different schools sometimes have different kind of focus. And so, yeah, there are going to be, you know, popular cliques within the school, the college prep school where all of the nerds go, maybe, and then at the school where all the drama kids go. So, I mean, it's a dynamic that's going to play out, I think, regardless of, you know, who's in the school. There are going to be some kind of hierarchy that emerges.
And is there a dark side to popularity in the way that high schoolers might use their status to further their own goals?
I do think that, yeah, I think we see that when we look at longitudinal research that follows kids over a number of years, we find that kids who become popular in 1 year tend to become more aggressive over time. So if they become popular, let's say in the sixth grade, you know, over the course of seventh, eighth, ninth grade, they're becoming typically more aggressive. Now, not enormously more. We're not talking like these, you know, the move from a really sweet kid to a bully. But we see increases in how aggressive their peers see them as over, you know, the ensuing years after they become popular. So I do think that we can identify at least a subgroup of popular kids who use aggressive behavior as a way of kind of maintaining the status that they've gained, manipulating their peer group in a way that allows them to stay in the popular group. So, yeah, I mean, I would call that a dark side. I think that's something that we should be kind of tuned into.
What are some of those aggressive behaviors? How do they kind of play out?
The ones that are most consistently associated with popularity are certain types of relational aggression, for example, like spreading rumors. So if you want to kick someone down a notch in status and maybe take their spot, one of the best things you can do is to damage their reputation and to start a rumor that has the school talking and has the school questioning whether or not this is somebody you want as one of your popular sort of leaders. And so spreading rumors is a big one. we see things like, you know, exclusion of certain people as a way of kind of keeping them out of the group. Maybe someone who's very popular wants to prevent a peer that they see as potentially becoming as popular as they are. So, you know, excluding them, making sure they don't make the right connections, making sure they don't, you know, take part in the right activities or get invited to the right parties so that they don't have the opportunity to give you a run for your money status-wise. So things like that.
Just give me...
These kids are smart. I mean, some of them are really socially aware. It is pretty intense. You know, when researchers do like focus groups with kids and talk to them about popularity, these behaviors come out and you realize, wow, these are some pretty brilliant, socially really skilled kids that we're talking to here.
Yeah. They're using their powers for evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk about the connection between popularity and risk-taking behaviors?
Sure. So this is also a finding that has emerged from some longitudinal studies that have followed kids over a number of years. And we find that kids who are popular are at increased risk, so they're more likely than their peers to start smoking, start drinking, and in some cases engage in sexual behaviors that might not be typical for, you know, kids their age, so maybe sort of precocious sexuality. So and that's there's a few different studies that have found that popular kids are more likely to engage in substance use and sexual behaviors over time. And so those are things that we would worry about, not only just for the popular kids themselves. You know, some of those are behaviors that confer some pretty serious health risks, potentially. But also we worry, too, that some of their peers who might be looking to them as leaders and as sort of having influence and maybe they want to be like them would also then, you know, maybe be more likely to start engaging in those same behaviors as a way of emulating them or trying to kind of catch up with them status-wise. So that's a concern for us, too.
And what happens when we've lived in this high school world that honors this hierarchical structure of coolness and we take what we've learned from that and take it out of the high school context? And what form does popularity take into early adulthood?
Yeah, so there's only a couple of studies I can think of that actually study popularity as we define it. You know, we're talking visibility, coolness, et cetera, and address that in early adulthood rather than focusing on middle school or high school. And of this, the couple of studies I can think of, they find the same patterns. So, for example, they find that there is a distinct popularity type of status that's very different from being liked. And that, you know, being liked is associated with being kind and not aggressive, not mean, but that popularity is associated with both, with being on some, you know, in some ways easy to get along with and a good leader and cooperative, but then also aggressive behavior as well. So from the limited evidence we have of college samples, college, you know, studies done with college students, it looks like it's a pretty similar pattern that we see the same kind of things playing out. You know, the popular kids, you know, maybe know how to use both kinds of behavior in order to get what they want, you know, get what they want when they need to. But beyond that, I don't think have a very good grasp on what it looks like sort of beyond college or for kids who don't go to college. The thing about studying popularity the way we do is you need a reference group. Like you need an intact group of people to ask questions, like tell us who the most popular kids are. We need to find out who they are. And we can't just have kids tell us who they think, like if they think they're popular, because we're not the best reporters about our own status. We're not always very accurate about that. Right. So we have to ask the other kids. We have to ask the peer group, who is most popular in your grade? Who's most popular in your dorm? Who's most popular, whatever. And so if you move sort of to the broader world to study popularity, it becomes impossible because right. You don't have that reference group to ask. So you can study popularity like in college. You could probably study it in workplaces.
Can we get a grad student to come here and study who's most popular in our office?
You have no idea how often people ask me that. Everybody wants someone to come study their workplace and like do sociometrics, ask everybody like who's most popular, who's nice, who's not nice. And trust me, I would do it. It just would be probably
so this
really
is a
difficult.
Sign that we still care, that we're still just like, but I wonder though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you want that information. Like, yeah. You want to know if everyone agrees with you probably. Like you're curious is like, are my thoughts about people consistent with everyone else's thoughts about people? Yeah.
So finally, I asked her, with the knowledge that you have on popularity, what should we do? Should we encourage teenagers to be popular to help them gain important social skills that could help them in their careers and adult life? Or should we discourage it to avoid the negative consequences associated with popularity, like the increased risk of substance abuse? Here's what she said.
I think for me, if I were to come down on one side or the other, My argument would be that we should want kids not to care a whole lot about it. We should want kids to, if they're popular and it's not hurting them, you know, it's not putting them at risk for substance use, they're not being really unkind to peers and, you know, engaging in behaviors that are harmful. If they're popular and they're okay, it's fine. I mean, it's probably a context in which they're learning a lot of social skills, you know, that are going to kind of stay with them. It's the worry about it. It's the concern for it. It's the like striving for popularity that I think worries researchers more than popularity itself, because kids who want to be popular and who it matters to them a whole lot, and you know, once they become popular, it's like a really core, you know, facet of their identity. Those are the kids that are more likely, you know, to engage in behaviors that are negative as a way of maintaining their popularity. And so that's kind of where we worry a little bit more. Like if my girls, I have two daughters, if my girls are popular, you know, they're young now, so it's not an issue. They become popular, I'll be honest, I'll be a little anxious about that just because of the research I do. But I'll be more worried if they come home talking about the popular kids a lot and they want to be part of that crowd and they feel kind of put off by them or feel excluded and you know, feel, you know, icky about that and want really badly to join that group. That's where I'll start to get anxious really and start having conversations with them about other priorities.
Ultimately, being cool is like a currency. It only has as much value as we give to it. But I recognize that's easy to say now that I've escaped adolescence. So for all of you still in the pressure cooker of popularity that is high school, just know that there's light at the end of the tunnel.
You know, it's high school. Everyone goes through phases. And then you get out of high school and you realize it doesn't matter and you become your own person. And then you become your own set of cool.
Thanks for tuning in and being your own set of cool. Just So is produced by me, Emily Tackett, and Drew Bernard. Artwork by Amy Azure. Stay updated on all Just So news and info by following OU's Twitter @UofOklahoma. We'll have a fresh episode for you soon. See you then.